Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, I talk to Deirdre Hedden. Dee teaches theatre studies at the University of Glasgow and is particularly interested in making the work of women walking artists more visible. The interview was recorded en route during a break in The Walking Library, a performance piece conceived by Dee and Misha Myers for the Sideways 2012 Walking and Art Festival. With the help of a troupe of volunteer walking librarians, the library of more than 90 books was walked 375 kilometres across Belgium. In the interview, we also discuss how Dee celebrated her 40th birthday by undertaking 40 walks with family, friends and colleagues.
So I'm Dee Hedden and I am from Glasgow. I work at the University of Glasgow and I teach theatre studies there. And theatre studies is a broad church for a variety of practices. One of the practices that I am interested in is walking, so aesthetic walking practices.
And how long have you been involved in walking, or how long have you been a walker?
I have been a walker since about the age of one. No, I have probably been engaged with sort of thinking about walking as a particular form of aesthetic practice only in the last couple of years. And I was prompted into a sort of heightened awareness of that through the work of Rights and Sights, who are a collective of artists who live in Exeter. And I worked at the University of Exeter for about 7 years. And so I sort of came at it through a site-specific practices, I guess, to walking. And then I wrote a book called Autobiography and Performance, which seems a long way from walking, but in one of the chapters of that, I was looking at the relationship of autobiography to place, and I was really struck by the fact that I kept encountering works that had walking at their heart, but they were all made by men. And I said in this book, very foolhardily, I can't find any women artists who are walking. And I felt that I'd thrown a gauntlet down to myself that I had to return to. And of course, once I returned to pick that up, I revealed that there were many, many women artists who were walking. And that set off a research project, really, about women artists walking.
And were the women artists walking, were they women artists walking, or were they women artists using walking as the catalyst for their art?
They were women artists. The way I was thinking about it was the actual walk was the art. So right. It wasn't that they happened to be women artists who were walking. Their work was the walking. I suppose I was just very acutely conscious that, you know, the names that kept coming up other than Janet Cardiff were the Situationists, the Flaneurs, the Dadaists, Richard Long, Hamish Fulton, Simon Whitehead, Tim Brennan, and this catalogue of sort of genealogy of a fraternity of walkers. And I mean fraternity of walkers.
Yes, fraternity.
So I thought, well, there seems to be a margin here of awareness. And probably about 10 years ago, Cathy Turner from Rights and Sights, you know, Rights and Sights is three men and one woman, and they decided to do gender drifts. So the three men went off with a group of men and Cathy got together a group of women, and, you know, it was a sort of quasi-social science research about did we drift in different places. And nothing conclusive can be said about that. It wasn't a scientific experiment. But, you know, those things sort of come together into Cathy and I thinking about raising the visibility of women artists who were using walking as their primary material, even if only the project was only to do that, to raise visibility, because everywhere I kept reading, even the books that were coming out, so even, you know, Robert McFarlane's new book, if you just look at the index of that, it's phenomenal. Like, there's maybe 50 names per page and two of them might be women. There's something about the written history of practices that make certain types of walking and walkers invisible.
We're recording this during the Sideways Festival.
We are.
And I'm standing here and I've got a nice light pack on my back. But why are you standing here with a label on your front that says Walking Library and a backpack emblazoned with Walking Library on the back?
Okay, so in doing research around histories of discourses of walking, I kept coming across references to walkers who would carry a book with them on their walk. Coleridge would carry a book, you know, a Dante book, or Wordsworth would carry something else, and they weren't particularly books that one would think about taking on a walk, but it just prompted an awareness that even within the discourse of wanting to escape from, you know, the solitary walker escaping from relations, which is the Thoreau line, you know, leave your brothers and sisters, walk away as if that's the only way to walk and to enjoy walking. But all of these folk were carrying things with them that reconnected them. So the Walking Companion actually was a book. And at the same time as I'd been sort of encountering mention of books being taken on walks, I went to a little symposium in Edinburgh that Tim Brennan was running, and Misha Myers was giving a paper at that. So we were both in the room when an artist called Alec Finlay coincidentally also mentioned the fact that historically people used to take books on walks with them, and people no longer seem to do that. So the Sideways Call for Artists came out on Walking Artists Network, I think it was. I emailed Misha and said, you know, we've both been thinking about this book thing. Would this be a venue, inverted commas, in which to think about creating a walking library of books that folk might suggest one takes for a walk? So either, I guess, books that they might think they would take for a walk, or books that they have actually taken for a walk.
Now, I know I've teased you about the Kindle, but but this is fairly crazy, because you are now carrying, individually, there are what, four librarians?
So there's four librarians, and we're carrying a library in four rucksacks. So there's probably, we're carrying about 90 books across the route of the Sideways Festival, which is 334 kilometres.
Completely mad.
So it's quite heavy. But you can see I'm walking upright still, although it's only day one.
And dare I ask, it's not the same four librarians for the whole route.
It's not the same four librarians. It is actually one of them. One of the librarians is doing the whole route, but we're going to find a fifth librarian for the last week so she can have a week off. So no, we've got a roster of librarians who actually volunteered to become part of the project.
Dare I ask, are they all women?
You know, it's interesting that, because of course there's another sort of gender discourse. Librarians tend to be women as a profession. We have one male librarian joining us.
Oh, you do?
We do. In fact, I think he's coming next week, so you'll meet him.
So a bit of equality and PC in there.
Exactly. Just whoever volunteered, and we had, as I say, one male volunteer.
Of the books, tell us how the books were chosen.
So we again put calls out on various lists that Misha and I are part of, and asked folk to put calls out on lists that they're part of, and just invited people to recommend to us the books that they would think would be good to take for a walk. And some folk, which was lovely, some folk told us why they would recommend a particular book, and that sort of brings a personal autobiographical moment into this, I think, which we hadn't reckoned on, but I think it adds a nice touch. We had more suggestions than we can buy, because we've bought all these books for the library. Some of this is pragmatic, so the Francesco Carreri book, Walkscapes, you know, is £136 now. So we weren't going to spend £136 on that book. So we partly practically bought the books that we could afford. It was also partly practical about the weight of them. We haven't got 100 hardbacks. And there are some books that I think that were on the list that folks suggested that we thought were quite iconic. The Rebecca Solnit's Wanderlust.
And has anyone gifted you a book that they've already taken on a walk?
So no one has sent a book that they've taken on a walk. People have suggested books that they've taken on walks, but they haven't sent us in. So that was the other thing about the library. We are asking folk, inviting folk in Belgium, actually, to donate a book to the library. But we didn't ask folk in the email circulation to send us books. We just asked them to send us suggestions for books. So the books that are not being carried are still in the library catalogue.
And let's get this right. At the end of the Sideways Festival, you're going to gift the library to the organisers.
To the organisers, we are. So whether Sideways is a one-off festival or goes on to become something else, and these things tend to have a momentum of their own. So we anticipate that the books that are in the library will continue to have relevance and importance to the Sideways organisation. But you asked a question about Kindle, because of course lots of folk have asked us, why are you carrying books when you could just carry four Kindles? So in that sense, it seems to be an anachronistic project, but maybe that's a good time to do it.
Well, I was going to ask the same. I was going to say that, you know, I'm recording this. It's going to be published on the internet. I've already realised that the majority of artists who are within the Sideways Festival caravan seem to have their laptops here. They're doing sort of real-time photography, all sorts of broadcasting and things, none of which would be possible without the technology. Yeah. And yet here you are, taking a sort of, dare we say, a dying breed?
Yeah, I think that's maybe partly the motivation behind it, though. You know, there's something like tangible about the book that you hold. Not that you don't hold a Kindle, but there's something tangible about the actual weight of a book and the smell. These are all second-hand books, most of them. They've had a life. There's text written on them. You know, there's a sort of palimpsest of history there that walks with us through this space. Some of the books are signed by the authors. We're in sideways. Some of the artists who are part of this who've got publications are beginning to give us their books. So the library's expanding as we're here, actually. But you can't replace that tangible, tactile quality of the book with a Kindle. And you can't browse, really importantly, Andrew, you can't browse the Kindle. And our library is a browsing library. You know, we want folk to come and look through and select text and make connections.
I'll dump the Kindle.
It's usually about this time during one of my recordings that I ask people to recommend a walk to me, or at least recommend a couple of walks for listeners to hear about. But I'm not going to do that because I'm much more intrigued by your project, My 40 Walks, because I reckon you're going to actually be able to recommend many more. But perhaps you'd like to explain a little bit more about My 40 Walks.
Well, it's not called My 40 Walks, it's just 40 Walks.
There you are. That's a good start then.
But they are mine, it's true. And
they
the
are
thing about
walks.
That, I suppose, is that those are walks that in a way are recommendations, I suppose. Because what I did, Andrew, was that when I turned 40, rather than throwing a big party where you have no time to talk to anyone that you've invited because you're too busy hosting the party, I thought I would send out 40 invitations to 40 friends and invite them to take me on a walk of their choice as a present to me for my 40th birthday. And that's what's happened. So I turned 40 in 2009 and I've been collecting up my 40 walks since then, and I think I'm about on number 33.
Now, the invitation itself, you sent them a compass or something?
I sent them a little box in which I stamped 40 walks as a little circle, and inside the box was the invitation and a miniature compass. So it was a little present in itself to them, actually, that contained the invitation. And then I followed that up by contacting them and saying, are you up for doing this?
I mean, this is quite telling because you've got lost on the sideways walk today.
Yeah, so but I'd like to say that I didn't get lost on my own on the sideways walk. Yeah, three of us got lost on the sideways walk. I think that's a good point that you raise. I am absolutely rubbish at navigation. I'm rubbish at reading maps. I'm rubbish at orientating myself. I never know where north is. I just don't have that spatial type of ability, and I make sense of the world largely through text, to be honest. So give me a text map, tell me turn left, turn right, you know, walk 200 metres forward, you know, straight ahead, fine. Give me something that's diagrammatic, and I just don't seem to be able to translate that into three-dimensional space. So inviting folk to take you on a walk,
indeed,
is they take you on a walk.
Part of the purpose here was to reinforce a friendship, or reconnect with people you hadn't seen for a while.
Or indeed to make deeper friendships with folk that maybe I'd only recently met.
And also in part to go to places that these people were recommending.
Yeah.
So,
or that meant something to them. Why did... You know, folk have been very keen to tell me of the walks they chose not to take me on. It's clear that people have thought, you know, carefully about where to take me. And some of the reasons might be that they're their favourite walk, or that they're a walk that they think I would like, or that it's a walk that they've never done but they want to do, and this has provided an impetus for them to go somewhere new, actually.
Tell us, what was the shortest walk and what was the longest walk?
The shortest walk, and even it was quite long, the shortest walk was probably by a three-year-old who took me to her favourite place in Glasgow, which was the Kelvin Grove Art Gallery. So we walked there, and it was remarkable because she seemed to know the way, even at the age of three. She had the compass in her hand, which I found very endearing. And then when we got to the gallery, we walked around the gallery and she took me to all the favourite things in the gallery. The most favourite thing, I think, being the leatherback turtle that's there, actually. So that actually, although it was a short walk, by the time we'd walked around the gallery looking at all the favourite things in it, it was quite a long walk. And the longest walk was probably the Lee Valley in London, which I did in June, and that was interesting because that's an area that's been completely redeveloped for the Olympics. The Olympics haven't opened yet. But I live in Glasgow, so the Olympics felt quite far away, and when we got to the Lee Valley in London, it felt like, oh yes, this is happening here, and it's changed the landscape. And that was quite a long walk through the Lee Valley, actually. But even that was, I don't know, what was it, 13, 15 kilometres?
So we've learnt that your youngest companion was three. Who was your oldest companion?
I think my oldest companion is probably two, and I don't really precisely know their age, because it's a bit rude to ask, I suppose, but I walked with a woman called Elspeth Owen, who's an artist, actually, who does walking art, and there's someone who I invited to go out on a walk with me. I'd only met her once, because I'd interviewed her, funnily enough, Andrew, and I just really liked her practice and really liked, you know, she's 72 and she goes on long durational, long distance walks, connecting strangers to strangers, so I admired her. The other person who's probably of a similar age is someone I call my Auntie Joyce. She's not my real auntie, but she lives in the place in which I was born, and she lives next door to the house that I used to live in. And so Auntie Joyce and I walked around the village of my birth, Cochrenan, in the west of Scotland. And so Joyce is probably about 73.
Okay, so out of 33 that you've completed with your friends, choose two that you're going to recommend to listeners.
Oh gosh, that's difficult because they're all so wonderful in their own way and some of them have been chosen personally for me. I think maybe like one of the most different ones was the one that Stephen Hodge did with me through the Paris Arcades, because I've, you know, read a lot about the Situationists, I've read a lot about the Dadaists. You know, France, Paris has that claim within walking discourse, I guess. So to spend time with someone who's a friend and whose work I also admire, though, going through the Paris Arcades and finding them all as we walked, you know, up north through Paris, that was just a really nice walk to do and full of history. And actually remarkably full of just present-day sights, the way these arcades have become either fallen into disrepair or, you know, filled with odd curiosities, or zhuzhied up for the tourist market. So that's a lovely walk. I mean, they've all been lovely walks. And I think it was an area I hadn't been to before, the Pembrokeshire Coastal Path. And that was one of the early walks that I did, and it was just a stunning, beautiful, sunny day, and the spring flowers were out. And that part of Wales is gorgeous, so I think... And you can't get lost in a coastal path. You see, I find myself... You can't get lost in the Paris Arcades, and you can't get lost in a coastal path. Now, they're called something, aren't they, in walking terms? Those handrails, they're called. If you have a handrail to allow you to navigate yourself in the map. So a cliff would be a handrail. I mean, that's an obvious one, but something that gives you a orientation on the map. You see, that's my map reading skills course that I went on. I did pick that up, but it doesn't really help me often to navigate myself around a city or anywhere.
Okay, now...
So okay. Someone else took me on canal walks, you see, and it was for the same reason. I think they chose the canal. In fact, I've been taken on a couple of canal walks, and I think it's because you can't get lost on the canal. No. These are not the best walks, just offering you two walks, because they've all been fantastic. I've got a blog, you can read about all the walks there. And when I sent the invitation, I absolutely meant it when I said it didn't matter the length of the walk or where the walk was. Like, it really doesn't. It's about spending time with that person.
If you're walking along beside someone and you're really deep in discussion, you probably aren't clocking where you're going.
Maybe.
Not necessarily taking in the sights at all.
No, maybe that. No, I think we were always taking in the sights, actually. I think there was always an awareness of the sights. Again, that probably depends on the walk. And if it's, you know, someone took me on a walk around Glasgow, and I feel very familiar with Glasgow, so maybe we were less attentive. But you know what? Maybe we were more attentive because it was familiar and we were looking for the strangeness in the familiar. I take a lot of photographs on the walk, partly as an aid memoir for when I come to blog it. So what might be in distance, a 3-hour walk becomes a 6-hour walk. So I think there is actually a lot of time to stop and look at the environment that we're passing through. But you're right, we're walking and we're talking and we're catching up. Our paths are catching up with each other if we've not seen each other for a while. So yeah, I think I'm probably more attentive if I'm on my own, but that's not the purpose of 40 walks. It's about walking and friendship.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Deirdre Hedden. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.